Good morning, and welcome to this Thursday, June 23rd, informational meeting of the Minnesota House of Representatives E12 Conference Committee, E12 Committee. Remote hearings such as this are held in accordance with the House Rule 10.01. The rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they're attached to the calendar event that you have from Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via that app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. We do hope that there will be a lively discussion today. Ms. Sunderland? Would you please take the roll?
Chair Dabney.
Present.
Dabney, present. Vice Chair Sandstead.
Present.
Sandstead, present. Representative Kreisha.
Present.
Kreisha, present. Representative Bennett.
Present.
Bennett, present. Representative Daniels.
Present.
Daniels, present. Representative Damath.
Present.
Damath, present. Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Drazkowski, present. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Erickson, present. Representative Feist.
Present.
Feist, present. Representative Jordan.
Jordan, present.
Jordan, present. Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt, present.
Marquardt, present. Representative Mueller.
Mueller, present.
Mueller, present. Representative Richardson. Education Policy Chair Richardson. Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson. Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
Wolgamott, present. Representative Zhang. Representative Zhang. Representative Joachim. Representative Joachim. Joachim present. And that is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Chair Dabney, you're muted.
I am muted. Thank you, Ms. Sunderland. And members, I want to draw to attention that this is Ms. Sunderland's final day as the committee legislative assistant for this committee. She is moving on to be the legislative assistant to Speaker Hortman. We're very excited for her, for that new opportunity and new set of challenges, but are going to miss her in my office and in this committee and the critical role that she has played here. She started with the House the first day of the 2019 session. I was a new chair, she was a new legislative assistant, and we figured out together how to make things work. And I'm deeply appreciative of all the efforts and all the good work and all the kindnesses that she has shown myself and the other staff and all of the members on this committee. Ms. Owen, thank you and best going forward.
Thank you so much for your kind words. It has been a pleasure and an honor to serve this committee. It's been a crazy couple years outside of just the start of that first day. We got a roller coaster after that. So thank you. Everyone for just your support. And if there's anything you ever need, please do not hesitate to reach out.
Thank you. So members, today we'll be reviewing on an informational basis, House File 2 was heard in Ways and Means last evening and passed to the General Register in actions there. This is the product of initially the conference committee and then later the working group with the Senate and included a long set of negotiations since we're well into extra innings at this point. But I would like to do a walk through the bill from my perspective, then ask nonpartisan staff to work through the spreadsheets and other documents that are in members' packets and available to the public on the committee website, and then look forward to conversation and questions. So members, I think we've had good discussions in this committee this year. I think we've been successful on holding to a number of principles, and those principles are reflected in this agreement. They include keeping students at the center of our deliberations, recognizing the need to change the experience of and outcomes for many students in Minnesota, but most importantly, Minnesota's BIPOC students, that public funds are for the support and benefit of public education and public school students, that we can make great progress by better supporting children and families in those earliest years, that our schools need stable, sufficient, and predictable funding, and that Minnesota students and school staff are deserving of the best, boldest work that we can do. We left the House floor having passed a bill providing $721.7 million in E-12 education funding. The global target agreement of May 16th provided a joint target of $525 million in the first biennium and $675 million in the second. To accommodate the solid investments that you're going to hear about shortly, the budget was adjusted to spend $544,204,000 in the first biennium and was actually reduced in the tails to $668,957,000. We'll come back, we came back with a large number of House provisions funded in the bill, and I'll note them below. We went into conference committee process with the goal of, as I've stated, stable and secure school funding. We've accomplished that. This bill has a 2.45% increase in school funding on the general education formula in the first year, and a 2% increase for districts across the state in the second year. Members, this stands in sharp contrast with the Senate that came into conference committee with a 0% increase in the general education formula the first year and a 0% increase in the general education formula the second year. This agreement includes over $10 million in special education cross-subsidy aid to support districts providing those essential services to students, and an $8 million increase over the next 4 years in English language learner cross-subsidy reduction aid, the first investment in those learners in years, all House positions that were voted off the House floor. We saw an obligation to improving the educational experience of students, particularly those students historically underserved in our schools, including BIPOC students. Again, done. Number of House provisions included here. Over $19 million in funding for a set of Teachers of Color and American Indian Teacher programs in the first biennium, and an additional $16 million in the second. That means more adults at the front of the classroom that look like the students in the classroom. It includes $3 million for the Sane Foundation. We've included $1.5 million for Girls in Action, $1 million for the Math Corps for targeted tutoring, non-exclusionary discipline training for school staff so that more young students can stay in school, and shared with the Senate, funding for crucial suicide prevention training for school staff. We also have included in this agreement $3 million for staff training in the letters literacy program. We recognize that we can have the most impact and the best return for state resources by investing in young learners and their families. Again, done. And again, in sharp contrast with the Senate that had almost no early childhood funding in their bill. Importantly, we're continuing 4,000 voluntary pre-kindergarten seats in districts across the state. This is particularly important as the economy comes back from the pandemic and businesses are looking for workers. This program allows parents to re-enter the workforce at a time that they are especially needed here. And remember, members, in some small greater Minnesota communities, the voluntary pre-kindergarten program is the only pre-kindergarten opportunity available in those communities. So providing those seats was critical. We also expanded our investment in Minnesota's children's museums to assure access to those wonderful play-based educational institutions for all families. Lastly, the four state agencies over which this committee has oversight all received operating adjustments. The total for the Department of Education is $4.918 million for fiscal years 21 to 23, which accounts for a holdback of $3.252 million in fiscal year 21. In the tails, they received $2.9 million for fiscal years 24 and 25. Representative Kreischer, I particularly want to call out to you and any other Ways and Means members. I had the incorrect numbers last evening in Ways and Means. I apologize. There's a reason they don't let me do math on this committee, and we've got excellent nonpartisan staff to cover me. The Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board receives an increase of $193,000 in the first biennium and $240,000 in the second. The Minnesota State Academies, Representative Daniels, think of you here, a $778,000 increase in the first biennium and $1,032,000 in the second biennium. And lastly, the Perpich Center for Arts Education sees a $351,000 increase in the first biennium and a $466,000 increase in the second biennium. Chair Sandsteed.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'd ask you, after I've rattled off all of that, can you please take the virtual gavel?
I certainly can. Good morning, members. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we begin, I would just like to echo my thanks to Ms. Sunderland for the fantabulous work that she has done for our committee, and I wish you all the best moving forward. Mr. Chair, I was going to begin by asking you if you would like to start or have House Research walk through first, but I think you have already answered that question. Before we begin, I just want to take a moment to note that Chair Richardson and Representative Zhang have joined us, so they are here. Mr. Chair, would you like to go first or have the commissioner start?
I can defer to the commissioner at this time. I've kind of said my piece in providing an overview of the bill. Welcome the commissioner to the committee. Thank you, Chair Sandsteed.
Very good. Good morning, Commissioner Mueller. Welcome to the committee. And at this point, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much for having me here today. My name is Heather Mueller, and I have the pleasure of serving as the Commissioner of Education. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank the committee and Chair Dabney for their work and support throughout this process of striving to ensure that we have the best possible bill for all students. And I've appreciated their partnership in this work. And I'm happy to be able to sit before you today in support of this agreement on E-12 education. This has been a year of unprecedented firsts and undoubtedly trying for so many Minnesotans, but especially for our students, our educators, our families, and our schools. The COVID-19 pandemic has put enormous pressure on our education system, and it continues to increase and exacerbate the barriers for our students of color, our Black students and our Indigenous students, and our socioeconomic inequities. The governor, Lieutenant Governor, my team and I are deeply committed to continuing to work to remove barriers so that every single student in the state of Minnesota has the opportunity to thrive, no matter their race or their zip code. This is not a choice, it is something that we must do. This starts by ensuring that we are purposefully engaging our families and that our educators and public schools have the resources and support that they need to create a safe and welcoming learning environment. Now, I'm keenly aware that our work is not done and we have a long way to go to meet the academic, social, emotional, and mental health needs of our students. But the agreement reached on education is a step in the right direction. It provides a much needed investment in our schools by putting over $1 billion into the general education formula over the next 4 years. This general education funding in our schools, largest and most flexible source of funding that will allow them to fund critical functions and avoid staffing reductions and increasing class sizes. The agreement also includes funding to make sure that our youngest Minnesotans do not lose high quality free pre-kindergarten by maintaining 4,000 seats that would have otherwise been eliminated. This is a critically important investment for our collective work to close the opportunity gap for some of Minnesota's children who are most in need. While I disagree that we should be in the maintenance mode, it comes to early learning experiences, the investment in early childhood education carries a return on investment for all of us. Now, although I would have liked to have seen a larger investment in our English learners and students receiving special education services, the agreement does include additional funding to address the cross subsidies for the targeted supports of our schools and provide our English learners and our special education services the education and commitment that they deserve. When it comes to diversifying our educator workforce, I am thankful that the agreement recognizes the importance of doing just that. It was one of the top priorities, not only of the governor and lieutenant governor, but I know of members of both the House and the Senate, as well as the Department of Education. Collectively, the agreement includes over $35 million for efforts to put more teachers of color and American Indian teachers in our classrooms. Increasing diversity of educators benefits all of our students, but especially those from historically underserved populations, who often do not see themselves in their classrooms, do not see teachers who look like them, and is not reflected in what they're learning. When Black students, Indigenous students, and students of color see themselves reflected, it is a profound effect, and diversifying the educator workforce is a promising strategy to reduce the achievement gap and increase educational outcomes for all of our students. And we know that programs like Grow Your Own are effective at doing things just like that. Many programs assist adults interested in becoming a teacher by providing stipends, scholarships, and other field placements. Other programs create opportunities for help to help high school students see themselves as a career for them in their future. The agreement for this program significantly allows us to invest $10 million in each biennium and includes corresponding policy changes that provide districts and schools more flexibility while also eliminating barriers for statewide participation in this program. The Teachers of Color and American Indian Teacher Package also includes other investments that support diversifying our workforce. Increased funding and expanded eligibility criteria for American Indian Teacher Prep Grants supports the development of more Indigenous teachers of candidates. And funding will now be available for the development and expansion of mentoring, induction, and retention programs that are specifically designed for teachers of color and American Indian teachers. Just as critical as getting more teachers of color and Indigenous teachers into our classrooms is ensuring that we are retaining them in our profession. Having an induction model and providing teacher mentorship in the first years are proven ways to increase teacher retention in general. Finally, I'm grateful for the common sense policies included in the agreement, like the prohibition of lunch shaming. We know that hunger can negatively impact a student's ability to learn, and quite simply, no child deserves to be hungry, especially in our schools. Our lunchrooms are an extension of the classroom and set students up for academic success. While I would have liked to have done more to prohibit the dismissal of students up to third grade, I'm thankful that we're able to include funding for non-exclusionary discipline training practices. For our students to be successful, they need to be in our classrooms. And the funding for this training is a step toward addressing these troubling disparities and ensuring that our students are given every opportunity to learn. I value a strong public education system that provides equitable access and sets all students up for success. And I believe that this agreement demonstrates a strong commitment to our students, to our educators, to our families, and to our schools. These investments will help our schools better support our students now and into the future. Thank you again for providing me with the opportunity to share these comments with you this morning. I continue to be grateful for your commitment to fund public education in Minnesota and provide each and every student the access, participation, and representation that they deserve in their education.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Dabney, would you like to add anything to this?
Madam Chair, no.
Okay, at this time, members, do you have questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I don't know if we want nonpartisan staff to do more of a walkthrough of the bill, provide a little bit more detail and refinement than I did in my overview.
Perfect. Why don't we turn it over to our staff? Who would like to go first? Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, members, thank you. Ms. Paramock and I will go through the bill summary real quick, talk about some of the provisions in the bill, and then Ms. Adrians will walk you through the spreadsheets. There are three of those in your packets. And finally, after that, we do have a district by district printout. If members have questions about the distribution of funds that are contained within the bill. Madam Chair, we'll keep these comments to a minimum as we go through the bill summary, but please let us know if we're going too slow or too fast.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members, the bill before you is House File 2 is amended by the A21-0239 amendment. That bill was heard in Ways and Means yesterday, and the summary in your packet says House File 2 on it. Article 1 of that summary is for general education revenue. And there's really just one policy provision in that bill that was in that article that was in the bill when it left the House committee for the first time. And that's to require the notice of two parents of the school district's policy on absence from school on days of religious observance. The next several provisions do three things regarding to general education revenue. The first of those, as Chair Davney mentioned, was the restoration for 2 years only of the voluntary pre-kindergarten pupils. So there's a couple provisions here and a couple provisions in Article 9 that extend those pupil counts for the next 2 years only. Secondly, the general education basic formula allowance was increased in this bill at a slightly higher rate than when it left the House. The increase is 2.45% in the first year, fiscal year 22, which compares to the 2% increase that was in the bill when it left the House. And in the second year, the 2% increase, while matching what left the House because the first year was bigger, that year is carried through to the second year as well. So the formula increase in the second year over base totals $296 per pupil. The vast majority of the money in the bill is spent on the formula increase. And when Ms. Adrian's watched through the spreadsheet, you'll see those amounts. There's a small adjustment to local optional revenue in Section 5, which holds the levy target at zero. And there's a provision that requires the school districts to report their compensatory revenue by functional area as well as by accounting area. Finally, the technical changes from the Department for Excess Tax Increments are in the bill. And lastly, there is a 4-year increase in English learner revenue that Chair Davney mentioned. This is outside of general education with a separate funding line item. It's $2 million per year for each of those 4 years, and it's proportionate to the amount of English learner revenue that it otherwise receives. Madam Chair, that's a summary of Article 1 of the bill.
Thank you. Who would like to go next?
Madam Chair, I'll be walking through the next few articles.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Pear. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Article 2 is the education excellence. Section 1 modifies requirements relating to a grant for schools to expand or create new advanced placement and international baccalaureate programs. Section 2 suspends implementation of revised academic standards that were not implemented by January 1 of this year. Those would be suspended until June 1 of 2023. It allows the commissioner to continue with current rulemaking activities and develop future statewide assessments. Section 3 establishes a digital well-being grant. The first subdivision sets out legislative findings about the negative effects of screen overuse and misuse. Subdivision 2 requires, Subdivision 1 also requires the commissioner to award a grant to Live More Screen Less. And then Subdivision 2 requires that organization to use the grant to support the creation of library resources to promote digital well-being. And other subdivisions also relate to requirements for that organization to use the grant. Section 4 is the appropriations, which Ms. Adrians will walk you through. Article 3 is the teachers article. Section 1 establishes the Come Teach in Minnesota hiring bonuses. Those were in the bill when the bill left the committee. It requires a district or school to verify that the hiring bonuses given to a teacher licensed in another state qualifies for a tier 3 or 4 license, is moving to the area where the teacher was hired and belongs to a racial or ethnic group underrepresented among teachers compared to students in the district. Sets out other requirements relating to the hiring bonuses. Section 2 requires districts to use staff development revenue, which is 2% of basic revenue for teacher mentorship programs. Section 3 clarifies the eligibility of students for the American Indian Teacher Preparation Grant Program. Section 4 clarifies the definition of scholarships under the American Indian Teacher Preparation Program. Section 5 requires school districts to develop teacher mentoring program. Section 6 is grants for grow your own programs. This is slightly different from what left the committee during regular session. That one had separate subdivisions for residency programs and other programs serving adults. So this combines them into one, that's subdivision 2. Still requires grant recipients to use at least 80% of grant funds for tuition scholarships or stipends. And the grants for serving secondary school students are still there in Subdivision 3. Section 7 and 8 are the appropriations that Ms. Adriance will walk you through. Article 4 is charter school article. It has two sections. One requires charter schools to comply with the corporal punishment statute that applies to school districts. And Section 2 limits the length of a corrective plan that the commissioner can impose on an authorizer and modifies requirements an authorizer on a corrective plan must fulfill to resolve the basis for the corrective action. And Mr. Strong will walk you through Article 5.
Madam Chair, Article 5 is the special education article. In addition to the appropriations, there are two policy changes. The first of those, Section 1, is the special education recovery services and supports provision. This provision received a fair amount of time and attention in both the education policy and the education finance committees on the House side. The language that came out of the agreement is very similar to the House language that went into the agreement or into the discussions starting with conference committee. It requires the Commissioner of Education to work with school districts and charter schools to develop the plan to address the learning disruptions that were faced by special ed children. The requirement in the provision requires that each school's IEP team meet by December 1st, 2021 to determine whether additional services and supports are necessary and how best to provide those services and recover the learning loss that's happened over the last year. Section 2 in the bill is a report on behavioral health services. As this committee was aware, there was a discussion about how best to get additional third-party billing for some of the health-related services in the special education area. After numerous back-and-forth discussions, the decision was made to require the Commissioners of Education and Human Services to consult with stakeholders and find a way to see if additional services can be provided through third-party reimbursement. Section 3 of this article is the appropriations section, which Ms. Adriance will address.
Ms. Parra, are you continuing?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll continue with Article 6, the health and safety article. Section 1 requires a district or charter school providing instruction on preventing suicide or self-harm to use the resources provided by the commissioner or other evidence-based instruction. Section 2 requires a district or charter school where a student with a seizure disorder is enrolled to have a seizure plan. And Section 3 is the appropriations section that Ms. Adriance will walk you through. And I will turn it back to Mr. Strong.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. Article 7, the facilities article, has one provision in it, and that provision requires a notification from a school district, charter school, or non-public school if the Department of Health or the Pollution Control Agency has found that an environmental hazard may affect the students or staff at that school facility. Madam Chair, Article 8 is the nutrition and libraries provision. Commissioner Mueller has addressed Section 1, which is the school meal policy change. And Section 2 in that provision is new to this bill. As committee members know, the lunch and breakfast money that's paid to school district is based on the school meals that are served. The ongoing state statute contemplates those being regular meals with the alternative provision of meals over the last 2 years. For the current school year, that's just ending the 2021 school year, this provision allows any excess money that didn't get paid because of the way those meals were provided to be essentially redistributed amongst the school districts. There's considerably less to redistribute this year than last, as the February forecast reduced the amount of meals, but there should or the amount of funding for those meals because of the additional federal funding. But the remainder of the state formula should be recaptured and redistributed among school districts for the school year that's just ending. And Madam Chair, Ms. Mock will speak to Article 9.
Thank you. Article 9 is the early education article, and two of the sections, Section 1 and Section 3, relate to the extending the voluntary pre-kindergarten seats that Mr. Strom already mentioned. So this is an extension for 2 years, for fiscal years 22 and 23. The only policy provision in the article is in section 2, and it's a limit on children in publicly funded preschools and kindergartens being allowed to use an individual use screen without engagement from a teacher. And there are certain children exempted from that provision, which includes individual children with an individualized family service plan or an IEP or with a 504 plan. And then this section would become effective July 1st, 2022. And this was a provision that was actually came out of the Early Childhood Committee. And I think I'm going back to Mr. Strong.
Madam Chair, members, Article 10 is the Community Education and Lifelong Learning article. There are no policy provisions, changes in this article, just the appropriations. Article 11 is the State Agencies article. Section 1 is Representative Bennett's bill, the evidence-based education grants, which this committee has discussed several times. That provision remains essentially unchanged as it left the committee. Section 2 is a clarifying provision, striking an obsolete reference to the licensing division of the Department of Education, since that no longer exists. And then the rest of the provisions relate to the appropriations for the various state agencies. Ms. Adrian's spreadsheet will spell these out, but essentially there's a little bit of cancellation for the year that's just ending to the Department of Education's budget, and then the next four sections appropriate money to the Department of Education, the state academies in Faribault, the Purpich School, and the Pelsby Board for Teacher Licensing. And finally, Madam Chair, Article 12 is the forecast article, and that article is the same as when it left this committee. That makes adjustments in each of the formula-driven appropriations levels to match the February forecast. So while there is a cost for those compared to, let me phrase that differently. There's no cost when compared to the forecast for those provisions, but they are actual changes to appropriations amounts. And Madam Chair, members, that's a quick summary of House File 2.
Thank you, Mr. Strong. Ms. Para, would you like to walk through your portion at this time? Let's try this again. Not Ms. Para, Ms. Adrians, I apologize.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As Mr. Strom referenced, you have three documents, three spreadsheets. So there is an overall aid spreadsheet, there is a levy spreadsheet, and then there is a change item spreadsheet. And I will be walking through the change item spreadsheet to show what this bill does that is spending or funding above the base. And I am going to share my screen. Madam Chair, is that a good size for members? Are you able to see that?
I can see it quite well.
Okay.
Wonderful. Looks good. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, as I said, this reflects the changes in House File 2 for the funding. And so we'll start with general education on line 9 here. And the first item, as Mr. Strom referenced, the formula increase is 2.45% in fiscal year 22 and 2% in fiscal year 23. This cost is just under $463 million in the first biennium and $643 million in the TAILS, the second biennium. The next line, the English learners cross-subsidy reduction aid. I should have mentioned on the spreadsheet line here that this is not funding beyond what you can see in the spreadsheet. So this funding is for fiscal year 22 through 25 only, as he referenced. And the base funding for that program continues, but this additional cross-subsidy aid is for these two bienniums only. And that's $2 million per year. And then the cost for maintaining the current VPK seats that, as referenced, will be for fiscal years 22 and 23 only. The cost is just under $46 million in the first biennium. And there's a cleanup cost because of the 90-10 shift that we have in education. And that's about $2.7 million in fiscal year 24. For education excellence area, the first item, this was a Senate provision. It is the digital well-being grant. This provides funding for the Live More, Screen Less organization, and it's $1 million in fiscal year 22. Girls in Action, that organization will receive $1.5 million in fiscal year 22. Math Corps, this program receives an increase of $1 million in the first biennium. The Minnesota Civics Education Coalition, on line 19, this program receives an increase of $150,000 in the first biennium only. And once again, members, for a lot of these programs, when you see just these one-time increases, the programs often have base funding that continues. These are the increases for some. But for Minnesota Youth Council, this is the only funding that this program will receive. There is no base, but they will receive $375,000 in fiscal years 22 and 23. On line 20, the museums, the Children's Museums in Bloomington, Grand Rapids, and Mankato will receive one-time funding in the fiscal year 22 and 23 biennium. Each will receive $50,000 each year, so that's $300,000 for the biennium. On line 21, this is a reduction to the college entrance exam reimbursement. It's not a reduction to the program per se. It's believed that the current amounts of funding are sufficient in order to cover the reimbursement requests that are received. So it's reducing the funding level at $500,000 each year. But it is believed that there is still enough funding in the program to cover the requests that are received. On line 22, the Santa Foundation will receive $3 million in the first biennium. And then similarly to the other reduction, this is a reduction for statewide testing. The reduced amount is $2.4 million in the first biennium. The funding will be replaced with federal funds for this biennium only. So there will not be a reduction in the program services. We'll move on to the teachers article. This reflects what is in Article 3 of the bill. The American Indian Teacher Prep Grants will receive $140,000 per year. Black Men Teach receives $750,000 in fiscal year 22. There is $200,000 each year appropriated for the Come Teach in Minnesota hiring bonuses. Line 29, there's an increase to the expanded concurrent enrollment program of $250,000 for each biennium. The Grow Your Own, the program that I believe Ms. Perra talked about, this program receives $5 million in additional funding for each year. And on the next line, on line 31, this was also a Senate provision. There's $3 million in fiscal year 22 for letters grants. What that is, it allows licensed teachers to complete a program that's called Language Essentials for Teachers of Reading and Spelling. On line 32, there's $1.75 million for non-exclusionary discipline training. The Teachers of Color Mentoring and Retention Incentive Grants Program will be increased by $4.5 million in each biennium. And then there is funding of $250,000 per year for the teacher recruitment marketing campaign. On line 37, the special education amount is increased in order to help reduce the cross subsidy. This is just under $10.5 million of one-time funding in fiscal year 22. Line 40, these are suicide prevention teacher training grants for the Cognito program. This is $265,000 in fiscal year 22. And then we get to the state agencies. MDE has an increase for the legal costs that they bear, and it's an increase of $4.5 million in fiscal year 22. And to help offset that, there was about $2 million that could be reduced from their fiscal 21 appropriation. So that amount is seen in column C right here. And then there's an annual operating adjustment for the agency that amounts to just over $2.7 million in the first biennium and just under $2.7 million in the tails. And then there was a reduction in fiscal year 21, in addition to the $2 million of $1.25 million, that's the operating holdback line. And then as Mr. Strom, pardon me, referenced, Pelsby gets an increase of $193,000 in the first biennium and $240,000 in the tails. Minnesota State Academies also receive an increase. It's $778,000 in the first biennium and just over $1 million in the tails. And the Purpich Academies receive an increase of $351,000 in the first biennium and $466,000 in the tails. And there, so this revenue line on 58, this is just applying the reductions for fiscal year 21 and offsetting the spending in fiscal year 22. So the total increase of spending from House File 2 in the first biennium is just over $554 million. And in the second biennium, that spending increase is just under $669 million. And I believe our chair referenced the total spending in the education area, and it's about, for the first biennium, it's about $21 billion, and then the second biennium, it's about $21.8 billion. And Madam Chair, that's it. So I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Adrians. Members, any questions on the financials or the spreadsheets? I'm not seeing anyone on my screen at this time, so I'm going to move on. Chair Richardson, welcome to the committee. Would you like to walk through the policy provisions at this time? Do we have Chair Richardson? If you're here, you might be muted.
Madam Chair, I don't believe that Chair Richardson is going to be walking through the policy items this morning.
Okay, my apologies. I was under a different understanding. Okay, members, any questions at this time? Pretty quiet morning today. I am not seeing any hands. Chair Dabney, any closing comments at this time?
Well, Chair Sandstead, apparently if we start early enough, the coffee hasn't kicked in for the committee quite yet. Let me start by thanking the conference committee members, Chair Richardson, Representative Hassan, Chair Representative Pryor from the Early Education Committee, and also thank Representative Kreisha. Again, thank you to the staff, to Ms. Burt and Mr. Rudquist, and then of course to the nonpartisan staff, Ms. Mock, Ms. Adrians, Ms. Para, and Mr. Strom. Can't imagine doing this without their expertise and professionalism, experience and insights. So grateful to all of the staff, as well as all of the members, bringing their perspectives and their expertise to our deliberations. It's a strong bill. It's a bill that we can all be proud of, and that I hope will have the support of members on a bipartisan basis as we head to the floor in the next few days, hopefully. Got to get this session wrapped up. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Members, with that, I would like to wish you all a great day, and our meeting is adjourned.